The PT Pintcast is sponsored by the Next Gen Institute of Physical Therapy, offering state-of-the-art certifications, orthopedic residency, and postdoctoral fellowship learning experiences, allowing participation from virtually anywhere in the U.S. We believe in moving the profession forward through novel, post-professional educational opportunities. We are the Next Gen of Physical Therapists. Enter promo code PT Pintcast at checkout for 15% off of any product.
This is the PT Pintcast, a podcast that talks about physical therapy over beer, bringing together clinicians, researchers, and forward-thinking PTs in a show that's anything but boring.
Let there be beer!
This is the PT Pintcast with your host, Jimmy McKay.
Here we go, the next edition to the PT Pintcast. I want to thank you guys. For spreading the word on Twitter. Pretty much the only way we advertise is person-to-person, PT-to-PT, or DPT-student-to-DPT-student. So I want to thank you guys for sharing the links to the iTunes episodes on Twitter and on Facebook and all that. You can find us online at PT Pintcast on the Twitter sphere. Today we're talking to a buddy of mine. His name is John DeNoyles, completed his residency in advanced orthopedic PT at Sacred Heart University. He's a graduate of the DPT program at SUNY Upstate in Syracuse, New York. And now he's living back home where I originally am from, which is Monroe, New York at Move Physical Therapy. John, thanks for cracking a beer with me tonight on the PT Pintcast.
Thanks, Jimmy. It's great to be talking to you.
What are we drinking tonight, John?
I am drinking a Sam Adams Porch Rocker.
Ooh, the Porch Rocker. Very summery. I like that.
Yeah, I felt, you know, summer's finally here. You know, it's hot, so this definitely quenches the thirst.
I went for the Shock Top Lemon Shandy. I got like the assortment pack because All right. because I'm a DPT student, and it was on sale. So that's how we roll while we're still in PT school.
That's right. So we're both drinking shandies. Right?
Doing the shandy stuff. I like the fruity beers. You can call me unmanly all you want, but I will stick to my fruity beers.
All right.
We had kind of kicked around some ideas before I got you on the line. And one of the ideas about something we could bring up, something that you were kind of passionate about and thought that DPT students should know about, was the idea of test, treat, and retest.
Correct. Something for new clinicians, it's and even advanced clinicians, something extremely valuable. I think it's something that may be brought up in our education, but I don't know how emphasized it is once we get to the clinic. Now, I'm speaking more from an orthopedic background, but there's, you know, that's not to say that this cannot be used in any of the PT setting. So my question to you as a student, because I get to question you now, is so you're in the clinic right now, right?
Correct.
Okay. And you do a treatment. How do you know your treatment was effective?
I usually ask if the pain, I mean, I guess, you know, our school is a Maitland approach. So I'm always searching for the pain. So I'm looking for the pain. After a treatment, I'll remeasure. I've taken upon that kind of approach to kind of remeasure afterwards from my CI. Is that kind of where you picked it up too in the clinic?
Yeah. And then it was further emphasized with my residency. So yeah, you answered that perfectly.
All right, I passed.
And yeah, and then you mentioned Maitland, and that's, you know, that a lot of my background has been with that. You know, you ask about the pain, or you measure range of motion. There's so many different things we can do. Maitland mentioned something about, and tell me if you've heard this before, of an asterisk sign. Have you ever heard anything like that?
I've heard of it, but, you know, I've been drinking and been in clinic for the last couple of weeks, so maybe you want to refresh my memory.
Yeah, so it's just his way of, here's his exact definition. It's the, quote, the discipline of highlighting the main findings in the examination and during the course of an episode of care. And this is usually the subjective and physical impairments and activity limitations. So you mentioned pain. So you do a treatment and you find out if that reduced their pain, but was it a certain movement? What prompted you, you know, what was that subjective finding or that objective finding that made you want to test it? So I like to take that test, treat, retest and make it more scientific, more so that we do the same thing and we make it reproducible.
Okay.
An example would be someone came in with shoulder pain. You do your examination. During your questioning, your interview, you find out, okay, maybe they have pain with reaching overhead. So you make a note of that. Once you've kind of completed your examination process, you found different impairments, you might find, you know, pick something to work on. Prior to doing that, you would have them, you know, maybe reach overhead, reproduce what their activity limitation was or what what reproduce their symptoms.
Okay, I'm with you so far.
You have them give you, you know, an exact number. So, you know, you can use the NPRS, so 0 out of 10, 10 being the worst pain imaginable. They say 5. You go and you do what you think is the best treatment. Then, after doing that treatment, you have them come up and do it the same exact way. And you kind of explain that to them, that this is, okay, this is how I treat. I'm gonna test you. I want to treat you, and then I want to see if if my treatment was effective. So you have them get up, do the same exact reach as before, ask them exactly again what that NPRS would be. And so hopefully, you know, you're looking for a change. What you want to find is a better or worse. Worst thing, I think, as a PT that you find when you ask someone, you know, is that better, worse, or the same, is they say, oh, it's the same. That means you probably weren't that effective.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you make it worse, that will give you some information. Maybe you just need to go the other way with it, find something else. I just think it's more of an efficient and effective process. And as a student, as a new clinician, you know, you kind of narrow it down and say, oh, okay, there's something I found.
Mm-hmm.
And you gain confidence in your examination, in your intervention, and it gives you something to go with. Another thing is when that patient comes up and you had an effective treatment, they give this look to you like, wow, how did you do that? That's
right.
Amazing. Even if you went from 5 to 4, you're on to something. You may choose to do more or you may stop at that. Then the best part is you got an idea for your home exercise program, something to send them home with.
I think I do the test, treat, retest. I think I do it sometime. You're kind of making me sort of think that I need to be doing this more, and here's why. Twofold. Number one, to make sure, and as a student who's doing his first clinical placement, to make sure I'm not just going through the motions and doing what I, quote, think I should be doing. You know, like I'm doing something because I know I have a patient for 30 minutes or an hour. I need to be doing something for the whole time. So I'm doing something. But I think I need to be doing one, rechecking what I'm doing to making sure I'm having an impact. And the second thing, which we talked about in a previous episode, is you're also reselling your treatment. You're reselling the field to the patient while they're in your hands.
Patient buy-in. I mean, patient buy-in is important not just for our business, but for the patient to be involved in their treatment. That's the most important part. If you're not clicking, if you're not communicating, if they're not understanding where you're going, you're not going to have that buy-in. You need that buy-in. You need their involvement. That's how they're going to get better. Now, you mentioned that you felt like you weren't doing it enough. And it's not like I do this after every single treatment I do. You can't do that.
Right.
You know, once you've established the plan of care and you've done this enough with one patient, the next time they come back, you know it's working. All right. And then it doesn't mean you can't test and reassess. I mean, you should be constantly reassessing. But if you had every time you did something, if you had them do a test, treat, retest, that might just be a little bit overkill. I do use it sometimes if, you know, in the middle of a treatment session, I'll say, can I see you? Again, reach overhead. And I just want to make sure they're not irritable. Anything that we're doing is not,
right,
not set them back a little bit. Another thing, a pitfall with constantly doing this, and I've been guilty of this and overdoing it, is if this is something more of a long term, so say it's post-surgery and a pretty significant surgery, and you keep having them reach overhead, and you're not getting the biggest changes, but it's more, you know that deep down inside it's more of a slow process, that patient's going to say, all right, every time I lift my arm, it might get a little more, but he keeps having me do this, and I'm not seeing the changes that I really want. So you need to be a little cautious of that. A second thing, and actually this is probably more important, is if they're really irritable,
mm-hmm,
you want to find a nice, easy test and probably not keep reproducing it.
That was something that was kind of hammered home, at least where I go to PT school, was check their irritability. Ask them, hey, when you do that thing, you know, that reach overhead, how long does it take for that pain to kind of drop down out of that 6, you know, maybe to a 2? And then kind of assess, like, are they super irritable? Are they acutely irritable? And if so, as you had just pointed out, you know, maybe make them do it once. You know, you're not going to want to have them reach overhead, you know, half a dozen times, because they're going to associate you with pain, and then they're not going to want to buy in anymore.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a very good point. So we talked about pain. How about, you know, I have my patients that have no pain. We've either gotten past that process or they've come in no pain. It's more performance, I guess you could say, or a limitation.
Okay.
Do you have any ideas of how you would test, treat, retest? You know, what have you used in the clinic?
Well, are we looking at, like, range of motion issue with no pain?
Sure. Range of motion is a good one, but there's also more that you can do for, you know, maybe performance. So
okay.
You can have them, measure strength. You can get more objective and use a handheld dynamometer. A good one is, you know, maybe they've had knee pain or just strength issues, but things are better now. You can just have a single leg stance and then just reach and see how far you can go. And
okay.
Measure that. So something that makes sense to them. If I have an athlete, I've got some soccer players right now, I might just have them kick and feel the quality of kicking after I do something. So it's not always perfect science, but it works. Another thing is the GROC, so the global rating of change. They can tell you, you know, you can have them fill it out when they get there. Do your treatment, have them fill it out at the end. When it shows that, you know, they got better, they see that they circled that, and then you see that, and everyone has a little more confidence in the path that you're taking.
Right, right, right. So a little more buy-in and a little more kind of taking ownership of their role in physical therapy too.
Exactly, right.
We talked about that a couple episodes ago. Somebody brought up a great point, which is, you know, surgery is done to you, medications are given and delivered to you, but physical therapy is done in terms of the patient perspective. You need to be an active participant or else it won't work.
Right. I actually just said this to a patient maybe just an hour ago, and I said, look, you're doing great. You could say to them, look, I'm just facilitating this whole treatment. We're finding what you need to do, but you're doing it, and you've been doing it on your own, and look how much better you've gotten because of that. Then they understand, and then they go home and say, hey, I'm going to keep doing this. I mean, look what I've done. I can keep doing this, and I can keep getting better. They're with you 2 to 3 times a week. That's 2 to 3 hours maximum. Most of the time, they're on their own doing their own thing. So that's a good point. That must have been a good discussion you had in that previous podcast.
Yeah, I think if you can get the patient to buy in, that's more than half the battle. My first couple weeks in my first clinical affiliation, you know, my CI would say, I can just tell this patient isn't doing their home exercise plan. And I was kind of like, at first, I just thought she was taking a real educated guess. But then after I've got my own patients and I'm seeing them on a regular basis, I can kind of tell. I'll just ask, but I kind of already know the answer. So you doing those exercises we gave you? And it's just like playing poker. I'm reading their face as they're lying to me.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking, no, you're not. But yeah. They're laying there hoping for a change. Sounds like a lot like the last presidential election or two. They can hope for change all they want. I do think it's part of our job as PTs is to get that buy-in, because that is half or more of the battle.
Right. Well, everyone wants, and I would as a patient, I would definitely want a magic pill or just, you know, someone to crack my back and say, hey, there you go. You're all set and good to go. Nothing's ever going to come back. And it's not always that easy. So you do need to get that patient involvement. It's their loss. And, you know, I don't know that people really want to lie to you. You know, it's shown in PT that patients, they actually, you know, especially if they like you, they want to kind of please you. So they say, yeah, I've been doing my exercises, but then ask them more about it. Have mm-hmm. them reproduce the exercise.
Right.
And then you start finding out that maybe they're doing it once a day, maybe every other day or when they think of it, and maybe they're not doing it exactly how they were shown. So what you can do with that is say, let's test this. Here we go cycling around again. You test it with that, whatever that asterisk sign is, then have them do their home exercise intervention and then have them test it again. If you've picked the right thing, you can show them, see, that's how important that exercise is. Look how much better it made you feel.
Mm-hmm.
There's an interesting study I had looked at last year, Chad Cook, part of another larger study, but they were looking at the changes that we make within a session and between sessions. And what they found was if they found a 36.7% within session change in pain,
mm-hmm.
so they got that much better during first session, that 96 hours later, most of those people, this was associated with a 50% change in the NDI, so the neck disability index. That tells me that their pain got 36% better, but then they had a functional improvement of 50%. That's very significant. So every time I do this test, treat, retest, I'm looking for those positive changes. And you can't back down or get frustrated if you don't get them, but really tells you you're on the right path.
Just because I'm crappy at math, you're looking for a 3 to 4 number change in terms of pain. If you can get that on the first treatment, you know you're going to get them.
Right. Yes. Yes, I had the exact numbers. My math is just as good as yours. Flip side of that is if people failed to show a significant change in pain, that their NDI did not increase. It actually kind of went the other way. So if you don't address that pain and get it enough, you're not going to do as well.
That's tough for PT because that's a lot of pressure placed on the initial evaluation and the initial treatment. Because as we know as PTs, by the time they get to us, whatever's been bothering them has been going on probably for a while. Not many people show up to PTs first. Am I correct in kind of saying that? They really don't think of us first yet.
Yes. Yes and no. Some are changing. Okay. There's different. I'd say different clinics are different. I know where we are. The word is out and it's more direct. And that's hopefully where our industry has been wanting to go, and I hope is continuing to go.
I know there's a huge push to see a PT first. If you see a PT first, you might avoid a bunch of insurance costs or a bunch of copays that you might not necessarily need.
Absolutely. Yeah, because so, if you're going to go to a physician anyway, you may still end up at PT and then back to the physician. So, but that's our role, and that's why we have a greater responsibility. We're supposed to screen out this, and this is why we've gone to a doctor. Is okay, they're here, what's the appropriate next step? Can they stay here? You know, do they need to be referred or consulted? That's where our profession's heading, and I think it's the right direction.
All right, we're gonna take a quick break and we're gonna be right back. I want to ask you some questions about residencies. It's come up over the last couple of Pinecasts that we've done. I just want to pick your brain a little bit about how you picked a residency, when you started even thinking about it, and then once you did, how you picked the one that you selected. So we'll be right back in 60 seconds.
The PT Pinecast with McKay.
Coming October 1st, Next Gen PT TV, an affordable subscription-based video platform designed by PTs for PTs. Access and watch clinically relevant content for as low as $7.95 a month. With channels ranging from orthopedic prep to applied pain sciences, you'll be sure to find a channel for you. Next Gen PT TV. More information at nxtgenpt.tv. On Twitter at nxtgen Institute. Next Gen PT TV. Coming October 1st.
The PT Pinecast. Should he be drinking?
Yep.
All right, guys, we're back with the PT Pinecast. We're talking to my friend John DeNoyles, a DPT, graduate of SUNY Upstate. Now he works in Monroe, New York at Move Physical Therapy. You can find him on the web at movephysicaltherapy.com. And but between PT school at SUNY Upstate and being out in what everybody likes to refer to as the real world, you did a residency. And we've been hearing a lot about that. That's been a big discussion. A lot of DPT students are very, very active on Facebook asking a lot of questions about this. You've gone through it. When did you graduate PT school?
2013.
And then you did the residency was 1 year?
Yes. Yeah,
so mine. When did you start thinking about that? And then once you did, how'd you figure out where to go?
Well, during my third year, I didn't really consider it. It had been brought up. We had some education on it, and I just didn't know. So I was in a little bit of a different situation than maybe some of my classmates, where I had a wife, I already had a kid, and it was, you know, more education. That's crazy.
Yeah.
A couple of my classmates that I was close with were seriously considering them, more on the sports end.
Mm-hmm.
And I got involved with a research study with them. Throughout that third year, I started realizing, you know what, I've been involved with other extracurricular activities and through this research study, I thought I'm doing a lot of stuff that supposedly all these residencies are looking for.
Mm-hmm.
So I started looking into it and I became very selective. And through the wonderful blessing of my wife, she said, look, let's stay on the East Coast and you can go ahead with this. So I looked at several programs and I applied to one and I did a lot of research and it was more of what I felt like that it matched me. So I got an interview and I spent a good portion of that interview questioning them and seeing why it would fit for me. And it was just it seemed like a perfect fit. And I was very fortunate to be accepted into the residency.
And you went to Sacred Heart University and was an orthopedic PT residency program. Walk me through like a day as a resident, because you're part teacher and you're part clinician and you're part student. So that's kind of a diverse day.
Yeah, we had three or four hats. So
jeez.
Typical day, I was considered adjunct faculty, nice way of saying a teacher's assistant. So
right.
I would help mostly in the lab. I did examination the next semester. I did intervention. I had the first year and second year students. So you'd go to class for about 3 hours, lab, you'd help with hands-on. But before that, you had to make sure you're prepared to do all this. And you got the notes sometimes ahead of time and of what was going to be covered that day. And then as I went on, I became a little more comfortable and started sharing more of my clinical experience, although brief. It helped. And I felt like, you know, I had told my students several times, I'm not so far removed from you.
Mm-hmm.
But just this year has given me a lot to look at and a lot to share. So after that, then I would rush over to the clinic, probably do anywhere between 4 and 8 hours. And again, you're a new clinician, so you're still figuring things out.
Sure.
And then write my notes. Then some days we would have class, our own class with the, I went with two other residents. And then lab, break off and do projects, spend a lot of weekends doing things. I would have mentorship in the clinic, find my schedule, and then we'd have, I had 3 or 4 different people come in and mentor me and just kind of watch me. And, you know, depending upon the patient, depending upon the day, depending upon that clinician who was coming in, maybe they would work with me, maybe they would help me with my patient, maybe they would just sit back and then give me feedback after. That was an extremely valuable process. It felt like you couldn't get enough mentorship. Difficult though, having someone, you know, it's like your CI. They're watching over you.
Yeah.
But they're not a CI at this point. You are the clinician. You're doing the clinical decision making. They're watching you. But after a while it became a wonderful thing. And not only that, I had mentorship outside. I'd have my cases and I'd make some notes and then I'd go to someone and just talk about them. And that was an extremely valuable experience because then it was more of a time of reflection and then they could give me some suggestions or did you look at this or why did you do that? And then you go back and I made some big changes in patients following that, some of those meetings.
So there's about 140 residency programs in the country, certainly not a spot for everybody. It's become the hot topic, especially amongst DPT students. I mean, you kind of look at the makeup of classmates and yourself and you say, these are pretty motivated students. They love to learn, otherwise they wouldn't be there. If they're not type A, they're at least type A minus, and they're always thinking about how to get ahead. Do you think that residencies as a whole will start to kind of expand? Is it going to only get bigger?
I think it is getting bigger. My school, there's rumors that they're going to, at Upstate, that they're going to start one there, and I hear rumors all over the place. I think, like you said, it's the hot thing, it's the new thing, and now as a student, I think there must be this pressure that says, I'm not going to be a good PT or a good clinician unless I get into a residency, and I totally disagree with that. There's nothing to say that you can't graduate and work for a few years and get into a residency. You can still get your OCS, your SCS, anything like that, and then go into a residency or even a fellowship. Definitely don't think they're for everyone. I am 100% certain of that. You have to question why you're doing it. If it's for the letters, if it's for so you can take, you know, in my case, I got to take the OCS early. If it's for that, you're doing it for the wrong reason. If you want to do it because you feel like you're good and you're strong, but you want to be questioned and you want to make yourself better, and you're willing to, if you're willing to be put down a little bit,
okay,
take constructive feedback for what it is, and you want to be a better clinician, then I think that's your best bet. So you really have to really analyze what you're all about and what you're going into this for. It's a tough year. It's a really tough year. It's extremely valuable, but you're invested. My mentor, he's the former director of that residency program, Gary Austin. He said you'll get more out of it for what you put in. So it's all about what you put into it. If you're looking to just coast, have some free weeknights or free weekends, that might not be the best option for you. You got to put it all into it. But consider what you want out of it.
One more topic before you go. You wrote an article a couple months ago, and it was something that I thought, and I love when I read something like this. It's something so simple that I could remember, and yet I think it was just kind of overlooked by me. You wrote an article about short versus tight muscles and different approaches that don't necessarily work. Do you know which article I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do.
It was something so basic, and it was such good advice because it kind of made me look at things a little bit differently. And I like articles and things that I read that make me look at something so basic so differently after I've read it.
This has, you know, been something that I picked up definitely during the residency. our society and to be athletic. And as a PT, we should be stretching. You know, it's best to stretch before. It's best to stretch after. Why are we doing all this stretching? Do we really need to?
Because every gym teacher I've ever had has yelled at me and told me to do it before or after or during. I don't know. It confused me as a seventh grader. So
Exactly. So you take a muscle, for instance, and again, this is where test, treat, retest can come into play.
Okay.
But let's use ankle range of motion for an example. So you find someone has limited ankle range of motion. You find it's not really the joint, it feels muscular. You go and have them stretch. Maybe that muscle is not so much short as in limiting range of motion, but it might be tight. Tight insinuates that there's this, you know, neurological or just there's this hyperactivity, that there's too much going on. You add a stretch to a muscle that's already working overtime, stretches a stress on it. Mm-hmm. It's going to make things worse. So I've got someone with ankle pain. I try and get them more range of motion. I have them stretch. They come back and they say, actually, that hurts more now. I feel flared up. There's my test, treat, retest.
Okay.
Then I find, okay, maybe I'm just going to calm this thing down. So instead, I'll do more inhibitory technique. So I might do, you know, I might find some trigger points in there, you know, use my manual techniques. I may utilize reciprocal inhibition and get my, you know, anterior tib working, for example, for that, calming that muscle down, and all of a sudden they feel a little better. So we stretch a lot of levator scaps. We stretch a lot of upper traps. We stretch a lot of calves. Is this really what we're supposed to be doing? Why do they need to be stretched in the first place? That's not to say that we shouldn't be stretching at all. You know, if someone's been immobilized, this or that. But I'm starting to find now, and actually been finding this for a while, is I'm hardly doing any stretching right now, and I'm doing more, facilitating more inhibition of these muscles. I think once we stretch them, again, we're adding further stress to that.
To an already inflamed, you know, structure.
Yeah, these structures are complaining and arguing and throwing up a signal saying, hey, this hurts. There's been some good research for medial knee pain where they found a trigger point in the medial gastroc is to blame for it. People don't know, they don't feel the pain there, but and sure enough, I've found that. And it's amazing when you work on something like that. Then you got to figure out why the trigger point's there. But again, that's another story for another few beers. But.
So just to make sure I'm getting it right. So short, someone's immobilized for a while. Their muscle has shortened because of lack of use. You could stretch that. But tight, there's a neurologic impulse coming to make that contractile tissue shorter. And if you try to stretch that, you're fighting against the actual muscle, the actual tissue, you're going to cause further damage. You're going to inflame them even more. Did I sum that up even close or what?
Yeah, that's a good summary. And again, this can go way beyond that because you can also have a short and tight muscle.
Oh, no.
And in that case, I guess you could argue what you treat first, but I would try and inhibit that muscle. You can have tight and weak, tight and strong, short and strong, short and weak. And then you throw in the whole neurodynamics puzzle into that.
Why is it tight?
Why is it tight? But is it, if I'm stretching my hamstring, am I stretching the hamstring or am I stretching my sciatic nerve?
Okay.
So ooh, that's just, again, another topic.
Yeah. The reason I wanted to bring it up was because I thought the idea was so simple, but when I saw it, I realized I hadn't really thought about that at all. And I like reading stuff like that. So I'm going to post a link to that article that you wrote when we post this episode in the information section of iTunes, because I think it's also a good article because it's quick, it's short, it gets to the point, it explains something really, really good. And that's something that should be pretty obvious to me. And when I read it, it wasn't, but I was glad I read it.
Right. Good. Yeah. No, I don't think it's intuitive. I don't think it's obvious, but once you actually start treating out these things, it's going to make a whole lot of sense to you.
Cool. Well, how has the porch rocker been treating you?
It's been gone for a little while.
All right. Well, I finished my shock top too. Gonna definitely have you back on the PT Pinecast in an episode coming up soon. You can catch some more information about Dr. John DeNoyles on movephysicaltherapy.com. We want to thank you for taking time, and we are recording at 10:00 at night. And John's got a gorgeous wife and two kids to go home to, who have graciously let me borrow him for an extra hour after he worked all day. So I appreciate your time and appreciate you having. having a beer with us.
Yeah, thank you, Jimmy. It's a pleasure working with you. And I really love this idea that you got going. I wish you, all the success with this.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it, man.
You're welcome.
Taking IPAs over TKAs. It's the PT Pinecast. The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. Our lawyers made us read that.